Okay.
So where were we when it stopped?
We were, anybody need to take a pee? Or...
you were at the board meetings.
Yeah, and they're coming with 20 to 40 people, all speaking with the
you
same
pick.
Voice.
Yeah.
Is it, do you get the sense they're actually prepared in the sense of coached?
Yes.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Oh, and what's AVC?
AVCP, I think it's Association
Alaska.
Of Village Council Presidents or something.
Yeah. But it's their equivalent of TCC here.
In the
Lower River.
Yukon Delta region.
They're social.
TCC is Tanachis Conference.
Yeah, it's their equivalent of that down there.
And what are you saying, that they come as a representative of that group come to and make the position of that group?
I don't know about
they
that.
Help, I think
they pay their way. They pay their way.
Organize it, right.
They help organize it. They're very much involved, whereas TCC here is not.
They don't help you guys.
No.
No. TCC helps us.
That's what
in a limited way, they do.
To go down there, these meetings? No, they don't.
Well, it's nothing like AVCP. I mean, for them, for AVCP in the Lower River, I mean, fisheries issues, that's the big thing. And in their, to provide some balance to, there's an organization called YERDFA, which we'll talk about later, but they have sponsored these let's all get to know each other up and down the river. YERDFA stands for Yukon River Drainage Fishermen's Association.
Which they got together when we were fighting the cap on the ocean.
Right.
And then the treaty negotiations with Canada.
Exactly, right.
That's when I got going.
Started sort of revolutionary, now has gotten to be a sort of let's all get along type of group.
Don't raise hell.
That's our view of it. But anyway, one of the things that YERDFA did on the, they're sort of big on field trips. Let's all get to know each other. And so they had people from way in the upper river come and take a sort of a field trip to our fish camp. And while they were there, they had also been down to Emonic and Alakanuk and places like that down by the mouth. And the one lady I talked to was very interesting. She just said, I think it's just absolutely dismal down there. Everything, all the buildings look really beat up and decayed. There's mud everywhere. I think it's just a really depressed area. I thought that was interesting.
Well, that other guy, though, said, well, everybody down there that had boats had really big boats, and they must have had a lot of money to have boats like that.
Well, the picture I get out of it is that they're kind of a one-horse industry or whatever. They're a long way from anything else, and fisheries is a thing, and so they're going to just fight to the death for that. That's my take on it. And a lot of the Lower River's testimony usually consists of crying, about how much they need the fish and everything like that. However, we do the same, and that's one thing that I find is just really ucky about the whole thing, is the sort of self-serving cant about, fisheries. But, you have to sometimes just in order to get heard, but I just really dislike the whole, we depend on these fish. We need these fish. My grandfather took these fish. That wouldn't be in our case, but I'm sure we can come up with a whole list of self-serving reasons because we make our living at it. It makes it sort of justifiable.
How would you like to see the discussion made?
Well,
save the fish, Ron.
Save the fish first. We're missing out a portion here of the history, but for the king salmon, we'll proceed with that. But let's, while we're on this digression, we may as well exploit it. what I would like to see would be for them to shut the damn fishery down in whatever it took to get the run back to health.
Which would mean no fishing
years. Which might need no fishing for a large part of the summer or years or whatever. At least you could plan around that. But fishing game is taking this sort of tepid approach now where they'll shut shut it down a little bit, but then there's all these inequities. And this
where they get way more fishing downriver than we do upriver.
Right.
To the point where they're asking people upriver to conserve voluntarily, well, the people downriver get to sell their bycatch of kings from a chum fishery, chum commercial fishery, and get to sell them for $6 a pound.
No, I don't think they can sell them.
Oh, yes, they did. They sold 12,000 kings.
No, they caught 12,000
kings. They sold them for $6 a pound.
They did?
Yes, they did.
Okay, that's a key point. I don't know about that.
Downriver this summer, okay, the run's looking bad. It's not as good as we thought it was. This is after Downriver's been able to fish on them, you know, not commercially, but as much as they wanted to, subsistence.
Because of the censusing. Now we're seeing...
Right, now we get up this far... And they're wanting to cut us down for like, they want to shut us down completely for several days. Well, and at the same time, the summer chum, they give them a commercial down there for summer chum. Summer chum come up here, they're no good, but they're still in good shape down there. So and there's lots of them, you know, there's no, and so they want to, since they can't have a commercial king season down there, they want to give them a summer chum season. So, you know, they can, you know, make some money that way. Which was fine, except they're going to kings are still coming in at the same time. And so they're going to catch kings while they're fishing for these summer chums.
And they did.
And they did. They caught 12,000 kings in, what was it, three openings? And they, you know, bycatch, you know, they're not targeting the kings, but they're catching them. And they were allowed to sell them for $6 a pound, which is what they get for them down there, five or six. And at the same time they're granting them this, they're wanting to shut us down the exact same time period. You know, it takes 3 weeks, almost 19 days for the fish to get up here from down there. So we're still fishing on fish that they were fishing on, I mean, we're, you know, 3 weeks prior. But they want to shut us down.
While they kept the...
Well, they keep the Lower River open and are selling bycatch of kings.
Okay.
And that was one of the instances this summer. And then Fish and Game is at the same meeting, you know, teleconference meeting, is saying, well, maybe everybody upriver could voluntarily conserve fish while they're letting them sell commercial fish, you know, sell them down there. And it's just, it really got people pretty upset, you know. And it's like, they're saying, oh, District 5, you know, we've got to shut them down. They're catching way too many fish. You know, that's us.
Yeah.
And
I'm just wondering why you don't have a middle and upper river Yukon Fishermen's Association.
Because we're too sparse.
There's not even that many people fishing. I mean, there was...
Can you go right up the river, say, from where you... Above Ruby, I guess, where you think...
Yeah, there's nobody fishing between here and Ruby.
Okay, there's zero. Tanana.
Tanana. There's Pat Moore. There's Lester. There's us. Roy Folger a little bit. Aaron a little bit.
Aaron.
Kazetnikov. Stanley.
Steve O'Brien.
Linda Johnson.
And then a handful of people up in Rampart.
Sonny Boys from Nenana.
Oh, wow. Gopher.
Gopher this year. And...
Sonny Boy who?
That's his last name.
Oh, first name?
Well, it's a family.
It's a family. I don't know. I mean, most of these are families. You know, except for us and Steve and Linda. Chuck and Carrie, limited amount, you know. I mean, they really just very little. And then Charlie Boulding.
These are all Rapids people.
Rapids
and Tanana.
Or you know,
and
20
Tanana.
Miles below Rapids.
And Tanana. And then I don't know how many up in Rampart. Not very many. Maybe four?
Well,
three or four?
I was going to say between Rampart and the bridge.
Well, the bridge is different. I was talking about Rampart.
Well, I'm thinking,
the bridge is, there's more. There's
okay. Just a caveat here. It drops off in the Yukon Flats. Fishing,
yeah, that's
if it doesn't cease, essentially it gets real sparse. There's like a fisherman or two in Fort Yukon, one or two in Circle, one or two in Eagle.
There's quite a few people that fish between Rampart and the bridge. You have to have a permit. and as far as Rampart, and
you think 20 at the absolute most?
Between not counting Rampart.
No,
people.
I'm thinking including Rampart.
Doesn't at the most, yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be the extent. And then, you know, maybe one person in Stevens Village.
Yeah.
A couple people, maybe. That's the extent of our whole district.
That's not commercial, too. That's just
that's subsistence.
Or
that's it. And that's why we can't get, there's not enough of us to get organized, and we're too spread out, you know. And I mean, we don't have time to go down to every meeting. We can't afford to fly down there all the time. And other people can afford it even less than us, you know. I mean,
well, it also has to do with the demise of fish camp life in general.
Here,
I mean, that's embedded. This, and that's why I say we're going and fighting these holding actions, because it's a dying way of life. Why is it that way? Well,
a lot of work.
Started biting your tail. Part of it is because they're more organized.
Yes,
no,
but it's...
No, there's other things, too. Like, it's been an incremental thing.
I mean, there used to be tons of people.
Yeah, there used to be tons. I mean, there were.
Everybody.
And the size of... It reflects the... You know, the size of... The number of dog teams in Tanana reflects that, too. At one time, we figured there was, like, something like 25 dog teams.
Oh, no, way more than that. That was late in the game. There was, everybody had dogs.
Yeah, anyways,
and the population, you know, the population, like in Tanana, really had gone down. You know, we're half what we were 20 years ago.
600?
Okay,
yeah,
the number of the population, you know, during the height of the fishing, like say in the mid-80s here, was up around 550 or something like that.
We're at 250.
It's now 250. The number of dogs in Tanana was up around 700 at that time.
That was more than that.
Now we're down to probably...
Two?
I was going to say more like 150 or something like that.
Well, Lester's got a lot of dogs. 250, I would say.
You know, it hasn't been like one factor in the decline. It's been a number. I mean, obviously the competition from the lower Yukon. But I think more to the point is as these various rough patches came along, the numbers would drop off bit by bit. For example, during the time when the chum salmon were in short supply, people began to just not go to camp. If they had dog teams, well, why bother keeping it? This is just a bunch of work for nothing. So it has resulted in fewer and fewer operators, and the ones that are left are the most efficient, you know, just like any declining industry or something like that. And, I mean, there's no young people coming in to start commercial fishermen.
I mean, our kids aren't going to do it. Stanley's kids aren't going to do it. Steve and Linda have no kids. Folgers, I mean, everybody still likes to eat the fish, but they don't want to, nobody wants to go to fish camp anymore to do it. And if you don't have dogs, I don't know. I mean, it would be worth it, but it's a lot, it's labor intensive. You know, it worked a lot better if you had a family group doing it. So when you get down to only having a couple people, it's a lot of work. You know, it's a hard way to make a living. And there's other options. You know, a lot of people have moved away, moved to town to get a job. It's
anyway, the net effect is it's all graybeards.
Almost.
Yeah, almost.
Mike and Marianne, but they do it limited amount.
Yeah. I mean, there's still people who will come up, say, over the 4th of July weekend or something like that, and stick a net out, you know, and there'll be a sort of a flurry of activity. But as far as the fish
and there's
camp
a few
life,
people that...
Even though people value it, they think it's really cool, and, you know, we'll get a lot of sort of support with the fact that we're doing it.
There's not very many people doing
it. There's not very many people that do it, because it's...
People throw a net in here in town.
Yeah.
You know. But, I mean, a lot of people have regular jobs now. In the summer, especially. I mean, that's when the most employment is. So, you know, if you're doing a regular job, it's really hard to go do fish, too. So,
yeah.
It's...
And with, you know, at the point we're at, too, I mean, it wouldn't take all that much to dislodge us from it, too. I mean, we can make it because, you know, we can get fish for the dogs, which is worth a considerable chunk of money, actually, when you add it up. I think we figured
it's a lot more than it was then.
Like when we figured it some years ago, I think we figured it was going to be $8,000 worth of dog food, which we don't have to buy. When we have a commercial season, we can make, you know,
$5,000
out of that.
On our best year.
On our best year. And then, you know, to sort of fill in the cracks, you have these dry fish which you put up and which you eat and which you can trade around in this so-called and controversial and probably at some point soon to be tested concept of customary trade. But anyway, that's why...
But we haven't been getting a commercial for some time now. So it's definitely made a difference.
Before you go on, I want to enlarge on is that I think is really interesting is the moral ambiguity that we got put in with what went on this summer. When Ruth's talking about the teleconferences, once a week on a Tuesday, you can dial this number and punch in a code and get into the teleconference. And this is run and sponsored by Yerdva. And any fisherman is welcome to join it. And the Department of Fish and Game is already on there. And this is supposed to be co-management. This is the concept beyond this, is that we're sort of reporting what we're getting, and the Department of Fish and Game then nods solemnly and goes, very interesting. And then they go off and do whatever they darn well want to. Over a period of years, you know, we might have an effect, but it's so glacial. Vis-a-vis the shrinking size of the king salmon, which is a separate topic. But in the situation that Ruth was describing, where they were going to do this thing that was grossly unfair...
And they did.
And they did, anyway. They let them catch 12,000 king salmon, which is significant compared to border passage. Stanley can tell you what border passage is and was this year and what it should be by treaty. But... We found ourselves in this position of saying, you know, when they're threatening to shut us down, no, don't shut us down. We need this fish just so we sort of keep our place. But at the same time, I'm thinking none of us should be fishing. Right. But I feel like Fish and Game doesn't have the guts to do so.
They don't have the guts.
Why don't they have the guts to do so? It would be the next question. A guy named Fred Anderson, who used to be the manager back in the more, I wouldn't say the salad days, but certainly the more halcyon days of fishing on the Yukon River. He was the upper river manager, but he's a kind of an all-around fish guy. Now he's retired from Fish and Game, so he's able to speak his mouth freely. And I was talking with him one time about the situation with the managers, the ADF&G managers in the lower river, because every summer... They go down there. They have a house they rent. There's, I'm thinking maybe four or five of them. You know, a manager and some techs and maybe an office person or something like that. And they have a test net, and they have a sonar, side scan sonar up in near Mountain Village, and from that data, and you know the plan that they have. In advance, based on what kind of a return it's going to be, based on a forecast, which has to do with the parent year of the fish, they manage the fishery from down there. Fred Anderson said, as a system that has a big advantage and a big disadvantage, the advantage is that they really are on the spot and they see what's going on and they get to know the fishery. They really get to understand it. The disadvantage, as he put it, was that they go native. And I've heard it put a different way.
You should explain what going native means.
Well, what I mean by that is that they yield to local the local will.
They come to see their point of view as being the valid one.
They come to see their point of view as being the correct point of view. And that is a really... Fred Anderson, you know, mentioned that as a disadvantage because they lose... their objectivity and their sense of distance from as managers, and they get to become they're trying to help the guys. They're trying to help their local guys, the local fishermen. And this is there perhaps is a place for a component of this in as a fish and game manager. I mean, your mandate after all is sustainable yield, and And to and sustainable yield implies that there's going to be a goody. There's going to be something for somebody to fish on. These aren't just fish to watch or to sort of enjoy as in a wildlife refuge. They're fish to eat. So, you know, that's part of their mandate. But what I think happens is they're down there just all on their lonesome, and there's hundreds and hundreds of fishermen down there, all who can pick up a phone and give Fish and Game all kinds of heat if there's a decision that they don't like. And so I believe that they are kind of afraid of them.
They are afraid of them. I don't know that it's the case now, but back in the, not that far long ago, those guys would wear bulletproof vests. They were afraid of being shot.
Is that so down in the lower river?
All Pat talks about that all the time. Mm-hmm. They were definitely afraid of being shot because of the, you know, and that would definitely skew how you think about things.
Well, there's certainly a natural human.
You know, they're not the troopers. They're not, you know.
Yeah, they're the biologists.
They're not wildlife protection people. They're just the biologists, you know. They're not there to.
This is not a job to die for.
Right.
And even if it isn't like a threat of immediate death, there's something about, you know, 50 people calling you up and hammering on you about the same thing that makes you want to sort of try to avoid that pain in the future. So my view of ADF&G at this point is primarily pain avoidance. I think that's their main mode. We get it here sometimes, in a very limited way. You know, we've had our fall chum manager who was trying to kind of help us out. And, you know, I mean, if he felt like there was enough fish, he wanted to do something for us. And so I think that works too, is that.
Well, for me, it just looks like the lower river has fish and game in their pocket. That's what it looks like to me. I mean, that's the effect anyway. I mean, they just give them whatever they, as much as they possibly can, and like the rest of you can get what's left if there is any. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it seems like. And, you know, and the further up the river you go, the worse it is.
Well, the other thing too is that, you know, not offering necessarily in their defense, but just being able to understand it kind of in a human way, is that these guys probably went to college because they liked animals. They wanted to be out in the field. They thought it'd be cool to work with wildlife. Then, you know, after a couple of field seasons, they find themselves in the office and they find themselves in an increasingly political position, and pretty soon they are on the hot seat. I mean, these guys really get heat. It isn't like a politician who signed on because he loves the sort of parry and thrust of politics. Most of these guys are kind of would rather be out working with fish, and now they're being thrust into the situation where they have to manage people. That's kind of something that several of us talk about around here, is Fish and Game isn't about managing fish, it's about managing people. So, at the end of a day, they would just like to go home and kind of have a life. They don't get paid all that well, and now they've got all this heat for free, basically. Also, I would say, sort of in their defense, I don't know if I could imagine a more difficult resource to census. The river is completely opaque with silt. It's some 1,100 miles long from the mouth to the spawning grounds, very sparsely populated. They have few data points, and their funding is really pretty paltry. I'm not sure what amount they get, but it's not much. So, you know, their censusing points are far and few between, and in a lot of cases they kind of are relying on fishermen reports, or else, like, for example, they'll send somebody down to rapids maybe once or twice a summer to sort of see visually how the fishing's going. But who can tell about that? I mean, the river rises and falls. A big run of driftwood will come down and knock out the fish wheels. And so that sort of source of data will come to a screeching halt. So it's a really hard thing to find out what's going on, but they seem to be in a mode where they are lowering and lowering their escapement goals. And they'll give it a fancy name. They'll call it a BOG or something like that, or a BIG, I forget what it is, or BEG, biological escapement goal. And it's a new name for a lower figure. Stanley could talk to that.
Yeah, he knows those numbers.
He knows all about that. But anyway, here we are in the position of defending our rights and at the same time wishing that they would just shut the damn thing down. And
last year, you know, it's like that was the first year they never gave the Lower River commercial fishery. It was a really big deal. And the size thing's a different issue, but they shut the whole river down.
Effectively gave them one with the bycatch.
That was this year. This was the year before. This was in 2009. That was the first year they didn't have a commercial fishery down there. Four Kings, directed commercial fishery, Four Kings.
Tell me what directed is.
That means that's the fish you're targeting. Okay. Like, you know, this one they had where they sold all these kings, these 12,000 kings this summer, that wasn't a directed king. That was a summer chum. And they just caught these they were bycatch, you know, just like the pollock fishery in the ocean. So that was the first year they didn't have a commercial. They also did, they tried to follow one section of the run up the river, and they closed everybody down for 10 days. You know, not at the same time, but it moved up the river so that they would let this slug of fish go by. That was okay. I mean, some people got upset about it. It was just like, it was fair. It was across the board. Everybody got the same amount, you know, that they couldn't fish. And I know some people with nets were fishing illegally. They sink the nets so you can't see the corks. But not very many, you know. For the most part, it was adhered to. And I don't know why they didn't do it this year. Maybe they thought they would get too much heat from it. But I mean, I think that's the only way to do it fairly.
We don't think that will be necessary for the coming year. It's not going to be so bad.
It's not, and it was worse, you know. The run was worse this summer. They should have done it. They should do it. What they really should do is do it for longer. I mean, they should just shut the frickin' fishing down for 10 years straight, you know, and it might come back.
Or throttle it way, way, way back.
But it's not, they're not going to do that, and I do think we're seeing the end of the run. I do think it's going to die. I think it's going to be the end of it. I mean, we just see it in so many ways. Not only the amount of numbers that are coming up, but the size is just... That's a different subject. But
it isn't.
Well, I mean, we'll get to... I don't know if you want to...
Yeah.
You got something else to say
one more thing about this sort of moral ambiguity thing. Okay, so we convinced them, essentially by our hollering, saying that we need the fish, that... that this was really unfair, and it was, but we were also losing our point. What were we trying to say?
You were talking about here we are trying to, oh, we need this fish, but we shouldn't be fishing.
Okay, right. So you know, we kind of convinced them that way, and so there was this sort of plaintive request, you know, sort of a plea from Fish and Game over the teleconference, like, well, We're really hoping that people will just sort of voluntarily, you know, cut back and stuff like that. And that just seems so, number one, so patently unfair, because here these guys were getting a commercial fishery down at the mouth, and we're asked to do this volunteerism. The other thing is that volunteerism, you know, for something like that to work, you have to have the sense that everybody's in the same boat. You know, there's nothing like in a flood or something like seeing all your neighbors pitching in to help everybody else to get you to do that. That's just human nature.
For most people.
But, you know, if you're asked to be the one to volunteer and it's clearly nobody else is doing it, then you just don't really feel like it. So I think the answer is what Ruth said, which was this true windows, and Stanley can tell you what he thinks of as like true versus false windows.
Allows.
Where, you know, really is allowing some big fish to get through. That works. I mean, you're a fisherman. You're out there because you're going to catch fish. And so, to me, don't confuse me with all this moral ambiguity. Yes, we can fish. No, we can't fish. This is simple. You know, this is simple. I mean,
And everybody.
Not just a select. That solves the problem instead of, gee, it would be nice if you guys, you know, fish. So then you have to wrestle with your own guilt. It's like, well, let's see. Is the run really in trouble? How much is it in trouble? Well, I don't know. I'm no scientist. Is this a good year? Is this a bad year? You know, it puts you through all this sort of, you know, thinking about it. It shouldn't, as the fisherman, you know, it's on, it's off. That's simple.
And it's fair.
That's fair.
But.
And you make plans accordingly, you know. Okay,
yeah.
So we won't go to camp until such and such a time. Maybe we won't even go at all. We'll go do something else. We'll go get a job, you know, working, you know, construction, something like that. You can plan around that rather than this nebulous sort of, well, we're going to open a little while, but we're not sure. We might do this. Everybody should voluntarily conserve. It's like, yeah, right.
Except for the people downriver. Yeah. But then the size is a different issue. One that Fish and Game is just now starting to acknowledge. Because of Stanley's project that he's been doing for years up there, which Fish and Game hated him for.
Say more about that.
Well, Stanley
He should tell you.
He should tell you. He knows. Can tell you what the dynamic is there.
He just was, you know, coming out with all this information that they would rather have kept not people know about, and he has this huge email fan base. He puts out these updates every day, and he's got this huge following now. And
huge for this circle.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
it's extensive.
Yeah,
you know, it's all over the state.
Yeah,
anyway, he started to point out that these fish are pretty small, you know, and we started saying it, and you know, Fish and Game, or at one point they said, well, the fish wheels, they probably just catch the weak and the small, and the ones that can't be out in the biggest currents. Like, we used to catch big fish. This isn't like the Tanana where the bed changes all the time, you know. It's the exact same spot to the foot that we fish at. There's been no slide. There's no, you know, the rocks aren't getting pushed around out there at 15 feet below the surface. You know, our lead goes in the same spot every time. We get hooked on the same. I mean, everything's exactly the same, and we are seeing these fish get smaller and smaller. When we used to have commercials, they would not accept a fish that was less than 14 pounds. They just wouldn't take them. When I was first fishing with Charlie, which was around 95, what the average size was around 20 pounds, 22 pounds, something like that.
Really?
But then like 95. Okay. Stanley started doing this project, and again, I can't remember the years, you're going to have to ask him, but we were heavily involved in it. For years, every fish we have caught, except for a few that go in the freezer, even those got weighed. Every fish we caught got weighed every year. This year, our average size of fish was under 11 pounds.
Do you know exactly?
10.8.
That's just for you. What, do you know what Stanley's is?
Well, that was us and Stanley. That was us and Stanley combined. I mean, he doesn't want to give up that it was just us, because he wants it to make it look like he got the fish from more other people. It doesn't matter. We're all catching the same fish anyway. We're just in a line. And actually, you know, just objectively, we were catching bigger fish than Steve O'Brien was this year. He didn't have his weight. He didn't want to get involved in it for other reasons. But yeah, that was our average size. I mean, we are catching kings that are less than a pound. You can't do anything with those fish. And yet it goes on, you know, and we always kept track of how many fish we caught. And, I mean, you know, and it was, but our biggest fish this year was 39 pounds, which was bigger than the year before.
Now, historically, you know, when I first started fishing, you know, 40s were fairly common. And, you know, every season, you know, you'd catch maybe 3 or 4 55-pounders, possibly a 60-pounder.
This is a wheel, too, not a net.
This is a fish wheel, yeah. Fish wheels, as far as we can understand, are catch a grab sample of whatever's going by. Nets, of course, with
only
large
catch,
mesh.
Only catch the big ones.
Only catch the big ones.
All the littler ones go on through.
And the consensus kind of among us rapids fishermen is that the size has been declining for about 10 years or so.
And this year is really the first year that Fishing Game has given a nod that, okay, the fish size are decreasing. Mm. Up until that point.
It's been so hard to convince them.
Up until that, I mean, we've gone, you know, to the point where they were blackballing Stan. They wouldn't give him information, you know, because he was spouting this and they wanted to shut him up.
Well, he's a thorn in their side anyway. I mean,
he is a thorn in their side for good reason.
I mean, his attitude pisses him off. In addition to
I realize that, but if they were more
stupid,
well, but if they were more forthcoming and more, you know, I mean, he's got data that you can't refute, you know, and they've been trying to for years. I mean, they've, you know, everything from the ichthyophaunus to the fish size to the timing run, everything. I mean, he's got it down. I mean, and they, you know, anything that, you know, they try to gloss over and pretend that's going on, he's like, no, this is, you know, and so he's constantly putting this information out there, and it really pisses them off because they're you know, they don't want to deal with it. They don't, you know, like with that ichthyophaunus thing. They didn't want to deal with, oh, no, there's no ichthyophaunus, and it's not a problem. There's no ichthyophaunus in the river, which was, you know, totally not true, you know, which was proven several times. But it's just like they don't want to deal with anything that's going to upset their apple cart at all. They just don't. 10 years it took us to get them to admit that the fish were getting smaller.
That was my question. So when you realized the fish are getting smaller, you started telling them, and so for really a whole 10 years?
Yes. Well,
no, I don't think we've been telling
8 years.
Well,
at least.
One.
At least. I mean, Stanley was. He was mentioning it a long time ago. And they, oh, yeah, whatever. You know, 5 years ago was when they were.
How long ago did they have that meeting that we went down to, you know, to talk about fish size? What was that, about 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that seemed like about the first sort of public forum where.
Yeah, but Stanley was bringing it up before that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pissing them off about it. They wanted him to shut up.
Well, there's other things that he's done that pissed them off.
I know, but he's right. He's been right every time.
Well, their science is pretty poor.
It isn't peer reviewed.
So that's
it. Isn't science?
Topic.
I mean, they've got articles they've written that won't they? You know, the journals won't even accept them because they're not, you know, scientific based enough. You know, it's another thing that pisses them off. They were trying to refute what Stanley was saying with this so-called scientific test, and they can't even get it published. Yeah.
You know? By the way. Can you each tell me your own backgrounds in science?
Before we do that, could I add something here? There was this meeting, which I think was about 5 years ago, Yerdfa sponsored as an anchorage, and it was to address fish size because, you know, there had been these rumblings from the interior. They either didn't see it at the coast, or else they saw it and were denying it. But it could be It could be either.
It was at least 5 years. I bet it was more than 5 years.
Salmon in an 8 1/4 inch mesh. They were at that point. And so they're seeing big fish. Maybe they were seeing their catch decline, but they, if they're to be believed, they were not seeing the decline in size that we were.
Is Anchorage fishermen?
No, they said this is lower river fishing.
The meeting was in Anchorage. This was a big powwow of Yurt for to try to address this problem or at least raise it. And
they denied that it was Bound River fishermen said no, it's not happening.
Well, it was interesting because like at the outset, at the beginning of the meeting, there was a few people. I mean, I remember this pretty distinctly. There was Virgil Umfenauer and myself, and I think somebody else from the interior trying to present this data that we were seeing, and. And to begin with, people from the mouths, this was kind of like they were seeing this as new and they weren't maybe quite sure how to react to it. And there was a few people that asked questions that kind of indicated that maybe they were concerned that this might be something that was happening. Then it seemed like after a break in the meeting, the gates had slammed shut and we were only talking the party line, and the only people who got up were people saying, gee, maybe you're just not catching the big ones.
I'm sorry, you're not catching big fish.
Yeah. So anyway, it became kind of denial, and it's been since then. However, not too long ago, maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, one of the people that ADF&G sends out every fall to do a subsistence survey was here with us, and that this person had also been doing a subsistence survey, collecting information and collecting the calendars. They have these calendars where you fill in what you catch on any given day. And they had been down in the lower river, and I asked them, well, are people there talking about the smaller fish? And she said, you know, there's some people who are starting to talk about it down there. This is the first year I've heard that. And so,
but that wasn't the parting line. That was just individuals at their house.
Yeah, that. But then, you know, as far as like a public declaration that this is a problem, I haven't seen it yet.
No, not from them.
ADF&G, you know, finally maybe is kind of grudgingly accepting that it might be happening. But it's just so dramatic for us. You know, I mean, it's just like no big fish. And, of course, that's a huge issue.
Because we haven't caught a 50-pounder. Yeah, we haven't caught a 50-pounder in our wheel in 15 years, 14 years. It was 96. We caught two of them, and that was the last time we ever caught a 50-pound fish.
This fish size and egg production thing is not just restricted to salmon, too. I mean, it's you know, there's plenty of other fish species. And,
we'll take a break.
We'll take a break.
Somebody could shut you.
Okay, we're back on.
This is the only thing that will work, really, in the end.
Cut you out of history.
How's the sound? This is a little different spot. Check, check, check. Cross check on one.
I might as well switch tapes at this point, because I'm getting near the end of it. Okay. Now that we've had a break, taking a pee, throwing a log on the fire, we'll get back at it.